Welcome to Your Lot and Parcel Podcast with your host, Benjamin Diaz, designed strictly for you, the consumer. You will find that this platform has your best interests at heart.
Thank you for joining me today. This is Benjamin. You have to ask yourself, why is public speaking so important? If you hate public speaking, you're not alone. Most people can't stand it. However, don't worry about it. What my guest has to say today will inspire you. He has made it his mission to help you and others in how to get through it because, let's face it, there are so many opportunities in life or in your career, you would probably lose out if you cannot give a basic presentation. He is a skillful public speaker and presentation coach. Let's welcome him to our show, Peter George. There's no question that to be able to articulate well can open up many opportunities in life, not to mention your career, and of course, in many other areas. And I'm happy to have Peter on our show today on Your Lot and Parcel. He's an expert, and he's going to help us to appreciate the importance of being able to give a good delivery. Peter, I'm happy to have you on Your Lot and Parcel. And before we get into our topic, please tell us a little bit about yourself and the impetus that led you down the road and what you're doing today, Peter.
Well, Benjamin, it's a pleasure to be here. And to give you a quick synopsis of how I got into speaking and training speakers goes all the way back to when I was a kid. I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, and in the city, when you grow up with two speech impediments, I had a lisp and a stutter, you learn to do two things very well. One is keep your mouth shut, and the other is become very proficient in sports, because if you were good in sports, you didn't get picked on. Yeah. And I did both those things. And as I grew, I still didn't want to communicate with people. My best friends, maybe, but and my family as well. But in school, no, I didn't answer questions in class because I was afraid I would stutter. And that went all the way through till I got out in the corporate world, where I learned that I could no longer keep my mouth shut. And I had to learn to present, and not only present, but present well.
There you go.
So first thing I did was gut books, cassette tapes. It was way back then. Cassette tapes, listen to them. And one of the things I found was I wasn't sure if I was progressing quickly enough or if I was doing things correctly. There was no feedback. So I eventually went and got help in a group setting and then in a private setting, a one-on-one setting. And that made a world of difference in my life, in the way I felt about communicating with people and the like. And then when I left the corporate world and went out on my own, which was about 30 years ago, and started my own companies, I realized not only was it necessary, but it was absolutely essential and beneficial that I speak, because the more I was asked to speak in public, in conferences or what have you, the greater exposure I got and the more our sales increased. So speaking is valuable on all different levels, not just for going out there and having your business do better, but that is certainly one of them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, communication is very important. It's just can't do without communication. You know, you spoke about having a lisp and, or a stutter. If you don't mind, what comes to mind is Winston Churchill. He was a great orator.
Yes, he was.
And did have that lisp, you know. In fact,
He had both.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. In fact, I remember watching this one documentary that when he had to get some dentures, some dental work, he made sure that they wouldn't diminish that lisp, because that is what gave him the charm, identified him, his persona. And he was a great, great speaker. And so, you know, things can be, there are upsides to everything, Peter, and which I can appreciate. Let me ask you this, Peter, would it be fair to say that there are only two categories of personalities, an introvert or an extrovert? And are there any advantage of one over the other, Peter?
Well, the experts say there are up to four different types of verts, if you will. I'm an introvert. I'm both shy and an introvert, because I think just the way I grew up, of not wanting to communicate. So I deal with my shyness and I embrace my introvertedness.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm done speaking or working with a client or anything where it takes a lot of energy around other people, all I want to do is go home and recharge. So that's how I know I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
An extrovert, on the other hand, recharges by being with other people. But then there are omniverts. Mm. And omniverts can play in either sandbox and play there well.
Mm.
They can transform from one to the other. Either way, they're recharged. And I would assume either way, they're also get tired, if you will.
Sure.
And then there's ambiverts, which are kind of in the middle. They have a little bit of each traits of the introvert and the extrovert, but not a lot of either.
Okay.
So that's what the experts say, and most of us classify them just as introvert and extrovert. And as far as being an advantage, I don't know if there's an advantage. I know there's a disadvantage in some ways of being an introvert, just because of the way society tries to change introverts. You get into a classroom like, oh, Peter, we'll have you open up. We'll have you speaking like everybody else. But if that's not what an introvert wants or can do, why are we trying to mold them? Yeah, you know, we're always telling people, you've got to be outgoing. You've got to get out there. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. No, not if that's not right for them.
Yeah.
There are plenty of ways for them to navigate this world without changing into an extrovert.
Exactly. I think there's a balance to everything. I tend to be like you, Peter. You know, I'm not the first one to speak up. I was always the last, you know, in the back of the classroom.
Yep, that's me.
You know, and but you know what I've learned to come to appreciate is introverts, they do have a little more inner world of thought and feeling is what I've seen. And in fact, you'll find that many are very good musicians or artists because of that being an introversion part of their lives. And there's a balance, you know, but you know, there's an advantage to everything.
Well, some of the best speakers are introverts, so
I believe that very much. Absolutely. Would you be so kind and speak to a person's personal appearance while giving a presentation? Or not only that, maybe his dialect or accent, would that make a difference in his efficacy?
I'm laughing a little because I'm thinking, God, I hope not with my Rhode Island accent. You know, if personal appearance, it all depends on your audience, on how you should purport yourself.
Yes.
And if you're going in to speak at a conference where everybody's going to be in suit and tie, I don't know if those exist anymore, but if they do, then you'll probably want to be in a suit and tie. If they're going to be in khakis and golf shirts, then you might want to have a jacket on or a nice dress, depending, you know, what you're wearing.
Right.
And that's usually fine. The old adage is dress a half a step, whatever that is, above your audience.
Oh,
and that always seems to remain true as far as I see it. Mm. And I think as a guy, I have an advantage. Men have advantages. We can go in a jacket and tie.
Right.
We can take off the tie. We can take off the jacket. We can roll up the sleeves. We can take that one outfit and change it when we get on stage and go, ooh, I overdressed.
Exactly.
Or you can leave the tie in the car and go, ooh, I need to put that tie on. Women might not have it quite so easy.
Mm-hmm.
As far as dialect and accent goes, I don't think that's a problem anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we first hear an accent, whether it's a different accent in the United States or an accent that might be foreign to those of us in the United States, it just takes us a few seconds to tune into it.
Okay.
But where before they would say, you know, try to get rid of your Rhode Island accent and stop pronouncing your R's. It doesn't make that much of a difference anymore because we hear all different dialects and accents through YouTube and television and movies and all the communication devices we have. We hear all these different accents now. So
yeah.
I embrace accents. I think they're pretty cool.
I think so. I think the main thing is to be clearly understood. It's the main thing, not so much the accent. A person can have an accent, but speak clearly, you know, and be understood. And Of course, if you wear a loud shirt, you know, a garish looking shirt, I guess that can be a distraction too, you know, not necessarily the accent, but what we wear and all that does make a difference. And by the way, I enjoy new English accents, Bostonian, and you're from Rhode Island. I think it does capture the attention. It does me in a way. I think of J.F. Kennedy when he was a tremendous dynamic orator, and that was his charm, that certain accent, you know.
And, you know, we even look at Boston. We're only 60 minutes apart, but
right.
And their accent's different from ours.
It is.
Outsiders will think they're very much the same, but you know, we joke around. We took the worst of Boston's, the worst of Brooklyn's, because we're kind of in the middle, and mixed them together, and that became the Rhode Island accent.
That's it. Yeah, I've heard that it's a mixture of Bostonian and Italian slang. That's what I've been told.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm Italian, so I
well, how do you like that?
I appreciate that.
Yeah, very good. Yes, you know, so here you are, you're getting ready to run up to the platform, you know, and everybody's just looking at you. Any tips on how we can calm our nervous system before a presentation?
Yeah, you know, everybody's going to be nervous to one degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who they are. I subscribe to Mark Twain's theory of there are two types of speakers, those who are nervous and those who are liars. And everybody's nervous. Steve Jobs said he was nervous.
Oh, yes.
Barack Obama said he was nervous. So many people will say they're nervous. Mm. So that's just part of speaking. What you need to understand is, first of all, you're not afraid of public speaking.
Mm.
You're afraid of being judged. No one's ever died of public speaking. Public speaking is not a hazardous thing to do. But you're afraid of being judged. So my thought is, take the onus off you. Instead of thinking, what if I screw up? What if I forget what I'm going to say? What if they don't like me? Instead of thinking all about you, think about the audience. Mm-hmm. What is it you're going to share with them? How are you going to connect with them? These are things that are positive and that you can impart on the audience and their benefit and welfare, as opposed to worrying about yourself. Another thing you can do is prepare.
Yeah.
If you're properly prepared, you won't be as nervous. We get nervous when we know we haven't prepared well enough. Yeah. It's kind of like jumping out of a plane without checking your parachute a second time.
Mm.
You'd probably be a little bit nervous and say, you know what? I should have done that. But once you take that first step out of the plane, just like getting up on stage, it's too late.
Yeah.
And the last thing is just breathe.
Just breathe. Yeah.
When we get nervous, we hold our breath. When we get scared, we hold our breath. Just breathe. Yeah. When we breathe, our body and mind relaxes.
Mm. Is there, would you say there's a rule of thumb as to how many times a person should rehearse the presentation? And how would you do it anyway? Look in the mirror or video? How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, look in the mirror. You know, for centuries, that's all we had, but don't do that. For a lot of reasons, don't do that. It doesn't work. But again, it's all we had. Video, prop up your phone, hit video, and deliver your presentation. But the key is how you replay it. And I suggest to my clients, they replay it three times. The first time is with the sound on, but facing down, so they can't see the screen.
Mm-hmm.
All they can do is hear themselves.
Mm.
Are they pausing enough? Are they using fillers? Are they making sense? Do they have transitions from one talking point to another? Make notes, make adjustments where you need to. Now, watch it, but don't listen to it. Turn the sound off. So now you can look at your body language and pay attention to that. Is it supporting what you're saying? Is it saying other things that you don't want it to? Are you pacing? Are you leaning? Are your hands not moving enough? Are they moving too much for your particular liking? Make those notes and then play it back a third time and watch it and listen to it together as we normally would.
Mm. Very good.
How many times?
Mm-hmm.
Rule of thumb, however many it takes for you.
Okay.
And it's probably more than you think.
Yeah.
Most people go, I rehearsed it twice, I'm good. Probably not.
Yeah. That's usually the case. Yeah. As long as you get comfortable and you're breathing as you should while giving that delivery or rehearsing, and all those are little clues that you're getting right into the groove, you know. You had touched about making sure the audience, you're working on a book. Am I correct in relation
yes.
to that? Tell us about that if you don't mind.
Yeah, the book follows very much the way I teach other people in public speaking, and it goes mm-hmm. anywhere from developing your message to proper body language to effective voice variation, as well as creating slides and all the other ancillary items that go with public speaking.
Yes.
And that should be out hopefully, just around the first of the year.
Mm. Okay.
That would be nice. It'd be, tell you, I love it. It's a labor of love, but the word labor is still in there.
There you go. Good. I'll be looking for that. So at the, come January, you say, huh? Come January?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, we'll be looking for that. Peter, tell me, what do you suggest as far as a speaker to open up? How would a speaker open up a discussion? I mean, without being, with not too many, or actually with no cliches and that sort of thing. How would you do that?
However they want to do it, whether it's opening with an interesting question or a startling statistic or a contrarian view, whatever it might be, whatever tool they use, make it something that grabs the attention of the audience. It can't be, thank you, Benjamin, for having me here today. It's a pleasure to speak to these fine people, that type thing. That's just snoring.
Yeah, it is.
It can't be any of those. It's a pleasure to be here, as opposed to what? You know, any of those things. That's really boring. And I look at it this way. When you read a magazine article, nowhere does the writer put above the headline, I'd like to thank the publisher and the editor for allowing me to write this. They don't do that. They thank them behind the scenes. And I think that's what we as speakers should do. Thank the people who are having us there to speak, but don't do it publicly. That shouldn't be needed. And again, it's boring. It's not a good way to open a presentation. Get right to the headline, something that grabs their attention, and don't let go.
There you go. Very good. Yeah. I've had some experience in public speaking, Peter, and I always tend to use a metaphor or a question, like you indicated, something to get their attention that will lead into the rest of the body of the discussion, you know. I found that to be very useful. We are spending time with an expert in public speaking and presentation coach. By means of his proprietary training, he teaches how you can be calm, confident, credible every time you speak from the platform. You will develop and deliver a compelling presentation that resonates with your audience. Here he is again, Peter George. But, you know, in a trade conference, now you got 100 people sitting there in front of you, looking at you. How do you determine the central theme that they would want to listen and hear to get their attention? How do you determine that?
I ask them.
Yeah. Okay.
All it's right. The easiest way to do it. Let's put it this way. When my clients call and say, hey, I have this gig for 6 months from now or a year from now, what do you think I should talk about? And my answer is always, and they know what it's going to be, I don't know, but let's find out. So you ask the person who hired you or brought you in to speak. You ask them not only their thoughts on what would be interesting, but for the names of some of the people who will be in the audience.
Yeah.
The champions who love to go to these things and listen to the speakers and take a lot away. And those who are going to say, oh, God, another consultant's going to get up there and speak.
Mm.
I want to speak to both of them and several of each because I can get their point of view. And once I have their point of view, that's how I know what they want to know and what they need to know.
Yes.
It's not based on my guess or the event planner's guess.
Mm.
They know. They're the ones that you're going to be speaking to. So who better to get the information from.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You do your homework prior to the presentation, get a feel for what their interests are. I can relate to that. And having said that, would you have a rule of thumb as to how many main points to try to communicate across to your audience in your delivery? Any thoughts on that? Because, I mean, you can overwhelm them, I would think, right?
Well, sure. But I believe there should be one main point.
One main point.
Called the main point.
Yes.
Just one. You can have three talking points. You can have one talking point if you don't have a lot of time. If you're doing a TED Talk or anything like that with less than 20 minutes, then you really just want to make one point and stick with that, because if you have three, you're going to be covering them at the surface level. So if you want to give people more knowledge or have them engaged in the presentation, you really want to stick probably with one. Over 20 minutes, over 25 minutes, when you have more time, you probably want to bring that up to three talking points that support and foster your main point.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, but it gives you an opportunity to go in depth if you only have one point. I can see that. Absolutely. What are your thoughts about using a teleprompter? You see that a lot on TV.
If you have a call for a teleprompter, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Nothing wrong with a teleprompter. I use them quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
The problem with a teleprompter is you've got to act like there's no teleprompter.
Yeah, that's a trick right there. Yeah.
It's right. And look at any awards show, Academy Awards, Grammy Awards, whatever. You get the person who gets up to the lectern or the microphone and they say it, and they do the little talk about this particular category. And you see them adjusting their glasses and leaning forward and reading the teleprompter that's halfway out in the audience. Mm-hmm. And they're reading that, and it sounds like they're reading it. They're saying, and the nominees for this category are boom, boom, boom.
All right.
As opposed to reading it like you'd say it, the nominees for this category are boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It does come across many times. I listen to those. It does come across like you are reading it. So the main thing is the take on this is to be as natural as you can. All right. As natural as you can.
You want to be. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How do I make sure that my presentation is compelling and memorable? What would you say to that, Peter?
Make sure you have ways to engage people. There are certain ways to engage people while you're speaking. You don't want to show up and throw up. And that's what a lot of speakers do. Yeah. They'll show up and just load information on them.
Yes, yes.
What you'd rather do, Benjamin, is reach out to them. And while you're speaking, just ask them questions. Rhetorical questions are fine. Sure. Real questions are fine, too. They might not be able to answer them out loud. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. You just want them to think, because that re-engages them.
Exactly.
And pause after you ask them so you give them time to think. So that's one way. Another way is to ask simple questions while you're talking, like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Or you've been there. And I have people go, Those are just simple, and there are other techniques as well, but those are just simple techniques of keeping people engaged. Mm-hmm. Keeping it memorable, both of these, compelling and memorable. Again, if you make it about the audience and serving the audience, if you give them something to walk away with, they'll take it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times speakers don't. And I'll give you an example in a story, short story.
Sure.
Working with someone here in Rhode Island who's very well known and speaks quite a bit and has a great reputation. And we have a mutual business associate. And she came up to me one day and said at an event and said, I heard you working with Ken. I said, yes, I am. But how do you know that? She said, well, Ken told me. I said, oh, okay. She said, but I have a question. Sure. She said, why? I said, well, that's not my place to answer. And I said, but why do you think it's odd that we're going to work together? Hmm. She said, I've seen him speak on several occasions and he's fantastic. I said, okay, tell me about him. She said, well, he's passionate. Oh man, is he passionate? I said, yes, he is. And he really knows his subject and he loves his subject. I said, yep. Right on both counts. What else? She goes, well, those are the big things. I said, well, let me ask you a question. She said, yes. And I said, what did you take away the last time you saw him speak? What was your takeaway? And she paused for a second, went, beyond that he's passionate and loves what he does, not much.
Mm.
I said, and that might be the reason we're working together. He knows he's passionate. He knows his business back and front. He doesn't know how to connect with an audience.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I think that's a very good point you're making there. And you talked about rhetorical questions and to engage. And if you can't answer that question, well, you know, you do ask a rhetorical question. But how do I know? Is there any clues as to whether I know if the audience is being hopefully enthralled by what you're saying, Peter?
Yes, and probably in a way that is counterintuitive.
Hmm.
If someone, after I speak, if someone comes up to me and says, Peter, that was a great presentation, I have to sit back and think, where did I go wrong?
Okay.
Because that most likely means I was passionate and I was likable up on stage, but that's not why I'm there.
Mm.
If a conference wants someone who's passionate and funny and likable, let them get a comedian or a magician. That's not why a speaker is supposed to be there. A humorist maybe, but not someone who's imparting wisdom or knowledge or whatever. So when they come up to me and say, that was great, I'd rather have people come up to me and say, here's what I took away. Here's what your talk meant to me. Here's how I look at something differently, or here's what I'm going to go do when I get back to my office or when I get home. That's how you know you captivated them. If they're telling you that you did a good job and that's all they got, well, that's all you gave them.
That's a good point. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. And you talked about humor. Is there a place for that? What are your thoughts on utilizing humor or levity in your presentation?
We love humor.
Yeah.
Humor is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Add humor. There's always a place for humor.
There absolutely. Are
very few situations where there isn't a place for humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you spoke about Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill used humor
right
on the floor of Parliament.
Yep.
So maybe at a eulogy for a tragic death, there might not be the place, but I can't think of many other places than that.
Yeah.
There was humor throughout the eulogy I gave for my mother, but it wasn't a tragic death. She was older and passed away and lived a great life. So I had fun with it. Yeah. Humor is great. Jokes are not.
Yes, yes.
Jokes, first of all, most of us don't tell them well. Second of all, we don't have the timing for it. And third of all, we're so nervous, we'll probably forget how to tell it, even if we have practiced it well. Stay away from jokes, add humor.
There you go. I'm for that, Peter, 1,000%. So in the process of giving my delivery or my presentation, you touched on it a little about language, body language. How important is that? I mean, what do I do with my hands? How do I stand? Or any thoughts on that?
Stand so you look confident. So meaning if you're standing on stage or in the front of a boardroom or whatever it might be, stand with your feet hip width apart and your weight centered. Don't stand on one hip and then 30 seconds switch to the other hip and back and forth and back and forth. Stand and look confident, because that's what people are looking for at an unconscious level, is that we have confidence so they can have confidence in our message.
Mm-hmm.
What to do with your hands? Use them as you normally would. Get them out of your pockets, get them out from behind your back. Use your hands as you normally would if you were speaking to a friend. Okay. We generally don't go nuts with our hands. And a lot of people go, oh, you want to make sure you don't have them all over the place. That's true, but most of us don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Except maybe Italians, right, Peter?
Yeah, you know, as Italians, as we would say, a lot of ethnicities would say, you tie our hands together, we can't talk. So you have to use your hands, but we communicate through hands.
Yes,
and here's how we know we do that. Here's how we know that we ourselves communicate through our hands. Let me ask you this, Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the telephone, are your hands moving?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they can't even see your hands.
No.
Yet you're moving them to communicate. We communicate with our hands. We communicate with body language.
Exactly.
We just do. So body language is very important. your body is speaking as much as your voice is. You have to make sure it's saying the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, it should reconcile with your movements of your hands and so forth, facial expression as well. I understand that. Very good. So, in the process of giving my presentation, speed of the presentation, is that relevant?
Speed as in how quickly someone's speaking?
Yes.
Oh, God, you come up in the Northeast here. Maybe until you get to New Hampshire or Maine. But, yeah, anywhere from New York up to Massachusetts, up to Boston. And then people say we speak a mile a minute.
Yes.
And what there's, no one speaks too quickly. Well, virtually no one speaks too quickly. What people are saying when they say, oh, Peter speaks too quickly, is that Peter's not pausing. Peter's just rambling on and not giving me time to think. He's not giving me time to digest what he's saying and internalize it. Yeah. That's what they're saying. They just don't know to say it that way. So it gets translated into he speaks too quickly.
Yes. I guess it can be compared to reading a sentence on the page. For some reason, they have commas and periods. Commas for you to stop and think a little, to pause. You do need that in your presentation. So we talked about opening our discussion. So what would you say, what's more important, the opening or the closing of your presentation, Peter?
Closing, without a doubt. Not that the opening's not important, because it is. It's the second most important part of your presentation. Closing, however, everything comes together for that. Think of it like a movie. If it wasn't strong, the ending wasn't strong, you probably didn't go away happy. You're like, wow, that was a weak ending, ruined the whole movie. It was great up to that point. Your closing has to be strong. It's where your call to action is, should you have one, and most of the time you do. That's where your call to action is. That's where you say, okay, after all this, after all you've learned today, now this is what you need to go do. Whatever it is you want them to do or think or whatever it may be, that's when it comes to fruition. And it can't be, well, that ends my talk. Well, no kidding. When you kept your mouth shut, we were pretty sure you were done. I'm being sarcastic, but you think of that ends my talk or the insult. It doesn't seem like an insult, but it is. That's all the time they gave me. Which means if they gave me more time, I could give you more information. I help you more. So just end strong.
Very good. So it's a call for action. I can appreciate that. And that does summarize what you had to say in the whole presentation. Very good. Well, I appreciate all those. Those are very good points. For those that are listening in, Peter, how can they contact you for one-on-one coaching, Peter?
They can contact me at petergeorgepublicspeaking.com. Nice and easy. petergeorgepublicspeaking.com. And I also have a podcast. They can listen to my podcast, which is just the opposite. Public Speaking with Peter George is the name of the podcast.
There you go.
So both of them are very literal.
If
they go to the website, there are more than 50, I think it's actually more than 60, quick tips they can download.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, I saw that on your website. So that's a good resource. And of course, your podcast is also a good resource. And I've enjoyed your company, Peter.
It's been a pleasure, Benjamin.
What you're doing is admirable. And I noticed what you had to say on your website or one of your PDFs. You say that what your objective is for the other to reach his goal, and what you're teaching is you're getting him there. So you're looking at the objective, and that's good. That's a good way to looking at things. And I think what you're saying is and doing has an element of altruism, and I appreciate that very much, Peter.
Thank you for saying so. So I'm just here to help and serve people.
There you go. Good man. So I thank you for being on your Lot and Parcel show, and I wish you the very best, Peter.
Same to you, Benjamin. It's been a real pleasure.
Hey, listeners, if you have a recommendation for a show, or you have a question or a comment, or just want to say hello, drop me a note at yourlotandparcel.org. And now, if you would excuse me.
This program has been produced by Isaac Diaz with music by Echo Foxtone. All the opinions expressed in this podcast are opinions only and should not be relied on. For more information, please visit the website yourlotandparcel.com.